thanks for listening and for being a part of Jason Q's Citizen and Friends on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the second hour of the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program, and I trust that you're enjoying our take on what you don't get in the mainstream media, and we will continue to source interesting guests, new stories, and fresh perspectives on how the world is operating and why it is that none of us seem to appreciate the way that we're told how to live. Case in point, Craig Schultz, who is a friend of the program, a regular guest, and sometimes stand-in for me, put up a post this afternoon, and he shared something he received from Suncorp Insurance Agency. And it asks a question: Craig, would you get a microchip under your skin? Hi, Craig. Technology follows us everywhere nowadays. What used to be a phone attached to the wall is now an entire universe in our pockets. Considering how much closer we are with technology, it makes sense for the next step to be keeping it inside our bodies with microchips, right? To learn more about the future of human microchips, its benefits and risks, click below. Plus, check out the latest news, offers and updates picked just for you. I don't know about you, but I feel physically ill when I read that. And worse, I despise being called a conspiracy theorist for calling this 10 years ago, 9 years ago, 9 weeks ago, and every other time in between. When you put a microchip under one's skin, at that point, you cannot possibly be a human being anymore. And at least you are an augmented human, a biological robot of sorts. This is the day or the age of the AI. And clearly, this is just the first step of a slippery slope of creating transhumanism. This isn't where I was meant to go in the show, but it's an obvious pathway in what you do. The problem I have with all of this, of course, is that it's a game of keeping up with the Joneses. And if you release an AI robot into the economy to do the work at the local factory, the process work, then suddenly the human is out of sorts. And so it is that the human would have to collect better intelligence, better skills to be able to compete. It seems that if you remove all the process work from the economy, what's left for all the people to do? Interestingly, it was the futurist Jacques Fresco in his Venus project that pointed out that technology was terrific if it was to free up the human beings to explore the human condition. However, what do you do when you've got too many human beings, this being the case of where we're going with all of this? And so it is that in a moment I'm going to introduce psychoanalyst and counsellor and also fantastic social commentator Malibu Burt. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of things and connect it to the bigger picture, which is the smart city for you, and work out where we all go in this. But before we get there, I just want to talk about participation. What does that mean? Participation is when we decide to go out there in the world with our level of skill and contribute our skills in return for financial reward. This is our jump-off point in life, for this is a determiner of expectation of lifetime and style. Our contribution to human existence, to society, to our bloodline, our family, for each one of us. So many stay on that trajectory from a decision made as a teenager, never veering off. One career, for many, just one job, although that's almost impossible today. But with that change comes the use of multiple changes to our working life. What we do in growth, using participation as one of life's true purposes, to change trajectory, to try new things, launch a new career or a new business or businesses. We lose money, we spend money, but we learn. We make changes, we fight the battles, and we win victories. We earn rewards, make achievements, reach goals, have dreams, and live them. What kind of participation do you do? For what benefit is it to you? Does it fit in with your dreams you had as a child? And what about now? Or have you given up? Because many have. You know how you can tell? When you need the government to give it to you. The government can't deliver your dreams unless you want to be the government. Only you can achieve your dreams. Ask yourself when you gave up, and then think about your dream, revise it. It's your life, and live it. Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio? Do you think we're doing a good job? Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Engaged and informed conversation.
They say what I'm thinking.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Malibu Burt is a psychoanalyst. She's a counsellor, a social commentator, and a researcher extraordinaire. And I'm delighted that she's able to join me on the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program today. Welcome, Malibu.
Thank you so much again for having me, Jason. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's terrific to have you. And I note that you don't stop working in all that you do, trying to work out how this great jigsaw puzzle of confusion and mass hysteria is leading one way or another way. But interestingly,
well, you just hit the nail on the head right there. This is the most confusing jigsaw puzzle of all time. Never before, I think, in the history of man, in our understanding of government literature, and I use the word literature loosely, have we ever been so confused by the content. I really wanted to, and I know I've spoken to your producer about this, about the smart city that you alluded to before. What on earth is a smart city? And we've heard that smart cities are where things are going to go. We've heard some of the sinister thoughts about that it's going to be all about tracking and about loss of privacy, etc. So, but is it really? And it's been heralded as so wonderful for us. It's going to be, you know, they use these wonderful words that have just become so in vogue at present, like sustainable, inclusive, regenerative, green, renewable. All these words, they sound marvellous. But what the hell do they mean? Anyway, so coming down from a Tasmanian perspective, I'm not sure if you're aware, but Launceston is going to be one of the, you know, the trial smart cities, in inverted commas. I think Newcastle is going first. Melbourne is going to be one of them, and also Launceston. So I went into the Launceston City Council to say, what actually is the smart city? The woman behind the counter didn't know what I was talking about, and she said, look, I'll give you a list of all the councillors. We've got their phone numbers, and you can contact them. So I thought, fabulous. So I take this list, and at the top of the list, would you believe it, it's His Worship the Mayor Councillor Albert Van Zetten. And not only is it him at the very top, but it also has his mobile number. I'm like, you little ripper. I'm going to call this guy right now. So raced to my car, rang him on my phone, and I said, I'm just absolutely thrilled, Mr. Van Zetten, to have your phone number. I really, 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 of course, this is going to voicemail. I really, really, really want to talk to you about the smart city. What does it mean? What does it mean for us moving forward? For the average punter in the street, how will it change our experience of being in the city? If you could call me back, I would be thrilled to bits. So next morning I got a phone call from him. I was outside. I rang him back straight away. It went to voicemail. So we played phone tag backwards and forwards, and I was able to say to him in another message, look, I am speaking to some of the people at TNT Radio. This would be an amazing opportunity for you to come on the air to espouse the greatness of Launceston being one of the pioneer cities in the world, and for you to proudly explain to everybody what this is all about and herald it as the next best thing. Nothing was said about that, but I was directed to send him an email. So I thought, okay, I'll send you an email. So the email said, Dear Mr. Van Zetten, in part it says, we hear all about this smart technology, but what does it mean for the person in the street? How will it affect our lives? Will we be tracked everywhere, as has been suggested? Will there be facial recognition technology wherever we go? Where does the data go? Where is it stored? Who gets it? What does it mean for our privacy? I said, these are just a few of my questions. Would love to hear from you. And then I got a generic reply, which was mainly about the processes rather than the results. So it said, in essence, but the key project was about returning what 550 survey responses were that the people wanted to hear about. It was about the engagement process. It was a desire to ensure smart technology is in place for public safety, et cetera, et cetera. But it didn't actually say what it was all about. And so then when it got down to brass roots, I said, well, he said, I am actually not at liberty. I actually don't have all the information. So now I found out today that the person that does have the information is a Cameron Smith, who's the Smart City Project Officer. And so I've emailed him today. So I hope very shortly, in the next week or so, to be able to provide you and your listeners with a lot of information about what Smart City is about. But what a convoluted process this is, just to get some straight answers.
It's extraordinary, isn't it, that you want to change the world in this way and you come up with this smart city as we have safe schools, everything's a two-word slogan. We don't know what it means. We just want it to sound really good and everyone will just jump on the bandwagon. We don't have to give you any detail, of course. How dare we waste anyone's time with that? We're just going to do it and you're going to follow along. It's like when Albanese, the Prime Minister, comes out and says, look, we're going to introduce an Indigenous parliament through the change of the constitution, but we're not going to worry about the detail. We'll worry about that later. And everyone goes, oh, okay, well, there you go.
And gee, that sounds nice and inclusive.
Yes, exactly right. And so you know that the devil is always in the detail, and the idea that they expect the general public once again to constantly trust them, regardless of which side of politics they come from. But as long as they're the establishment, they're there and you can't get elected, then you're just going to do what they say. It's the perennial difficult battle that we all have to take, and the frustration amongst all of us when, heaven forbid, we just ask for information from our local mayor, who is not at liberty to tell us anything because he doesn't know anything about it. How did that make you feel, Malibu, in that moment?
To be truthful, last night I was furious. Furious. That, in fact, the text message, when he said, look, I don't have all the details, and I said, and contact, and he gave me the email address, which is just ridiculous, contact us at launceston.tas.gov.au. I mean, that's just a generic one on the website, right? And then ask for the relevant officer. He didn't even know who the relevant officer was. And yet you're the so I wrote back and I said, but wait a minute. You're the spokesperson.
Yes.
You're the figurehead. To not know the mechanics of the biggest project to affect Tasmanians and Australia and the world, you know, at large, to not know is, I mean, who are you talking to, a 10-year-old? That makes no sense. It's like saying to someone, okay, now we're going to build this amazing apartment block. It's going to have 24 apartments in them. They're going to be superbly appointed. You're going to have terrific views of this park and that park. They're going to have all the latest amenities. And when you say, oh, great, I'd like to put down a deposit. Can I see the plans? Oh, no, we're not going to show you until they're finished.
That's right.
And that's exactly what he said. I haven't got my mobile with me, but he said, the details, we don't have the details, and as it won't be finished for, you know, the completion is months away. Well, I want to see the building plans for this high-rise. Sure, it won't be finished for 2 years or a year and a half, but surely you can show me the plans.
Yeah, it's extraordinary, isn't it? Because of course you can't even tell your banker, your financier, that you want to put a deposit on unless they see the detail.
It's going to be really amazing and inclusive and sustainable, and you'll love it. And just give us your money.
That's right. And then the bank says, "Yeah, we'll give you the $800,000 you need for your loan.
Yeah, no
problem. Yeah, don't worry about that. It'll be fine."
That's Disneyland, isn't it? It's ridiculous. So I was offended last night that I couldn't even get a straight answer. I was thrilled to be getting what I viewed as the head honcho. Somebody who's, you know, in charge. Now, I'm not sure about the parliamentary system. Perhaps he's not particularly privy to all of the information, and maybe it is subject to other parties attached to the project. But to not even know who they are
is a different
story.
It's unbelievable. 8 years ago, when I was living on the central coast of New South Wales, in a particular suburb, most of the central coast doesn't have curb and guttering, so you just have sort of dirt up to your driveway and big ditches where the water runs through, and it's entirely frustrating. There was potholes all throughout the road in this beautiful waterside, lakeside suburb that we lived in. We actually backed onto the lake. It was magic, but the roads and the guttering was appalling, and I'd had enough after a couple of years, so I got onto the council website, and I found all of the councillors, and all of them have their council supplied mobile phone number listed publicly. And I figured, you know what, I'm going to message all of them and find out who responds to get a response. It was the same message to everyone. And one particular council responded to me by saying, "Who is this and how did you get my number?" Question mark. And I said, "I'm a constituent, I have questions, and I'm pleased to say that you will not be getting re-elected next time around," which he didn't. And that was the extent of the conversation. I thought, who are these people? They go to the lengths of getting elected, they want to have prestige, and they want to have all this notoriety in your local area because they're somehow important. But when it comes to actually doing the public job that they're paid to do, and admittedly councillors get paid a pittance to do it, but it is only a part-time gig, not interested in the slightest. And further, to add further insult to injury, the councils actually got merged together, Wyong and Gosford, and have since gone into financial ruin, as you would expect. This is the level of incompetence that we get today. So there's no wonder that all of us are entirely frustrated with our local government here in Australia. They just don't seem to be up to the task. Malibu, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, so much more to talk about here on TNT Radio.
You should hear what Patrick Henningsen's talking about.
August 8th was also the day of what a lot of Western pundits will say when Russia, invaded Georgia. That's how it's usually portrayed by all the sort of brains that you get and pass for geopolitical commentators. But actually what happened was Georgia attacked South Ossetia. Russian peacekeeping forces moved in and they pushed into Georgia in order to sort of neutralize the threat to South Ossetia. But that was basically an extension of NATO's announcement that year that they wanted to expand NATO to Georgia and Ukraine and to be eventually members of NATO. And the current conflict, the current hostilities that you see right now in Ukraine, it really, that's one of the flashpoints, one of the triggers that led to what you've seen now in 2022. So it's important to have some perspective. It's important to have a little bit of history. If you don't have any history, if you're not factoring in the progression of events that have led us to this day, to this situation, then you're pretty much flying blind and you're at the mercy of whatever the short-term shallow narrative that's being pumped out by these bureaucrats and propagandists, streaming into the mainstream press and then out to the public.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
A lot of people may not agree with us right now, but there may come a time when they actually have an issue that affects them, that they don't have the freedom to choose. And if we don't preserve it, we won't have it.
Get to see this for yourself.
We begin this new week with an extraordinary moment in our history. 18 days into this truck convoy, and the federal government invoked a security measure that goes beyond anything seen in this country in the last 50 years.
Banks will be told to freeze the accounts of anyone helping finance the protests. And the owners of vehicles jamming streets will be directly targeted.
Trucking for Freedom, Chapter 1. How we got here. Visit truckingforfreedom.com.
Government today.
They're not human. They ought to be destroyed.
It's like all the children from the Village of the Damned grew up and went into politics.
You can't stop us, you know.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program. I'm here with Malibu Burt. She's a psychoanalyst, a counsellor, social commentator, writer. There's nothing that Malibu can't do, it seems, including finding out from the local mayor about smart cities and catching him out. And it turns out the mayor himself ain't so smart after all. But Malibu, in all of this, and in my intro today, I wanted to talk about the idea that the microchip is now being seeped out through the corporate world and talking about how we participate in society. When we are so confused by what's going on here, how do people cope on a mental health level, given that we just seem to be living on shifting sands?
Well, I think it's fairly fair to say that we're not. We're not coping. We are confused. I mean, you know, the whole divide and conquer thing. I mean, what people need to be efficacious mentally, okay, to live well, which is another buzzword that they're using, by the way, to live well means to, and inclusiveness, another buzzword, means that we have our families, we have our social systems, we have our friendships, we have our colleagues, and we feel like we belong. We feel like there's an egalitarianism amongst the tribe because prehistorically we're all tribes. And so to have really good mental health means that we've got everything that we need. So when you start shifting, dividing colleagues, friends, relatives, work, and the shifting sands, as you say, there cannot be any mental health. You cannot have confusion and shifting sands and confusing social messages about, you know, for example, you know, COVID, you know, originally when it first came out, it was only for somebody with comorbidities that were over 75 in a nursing home. Then suddenly it's for somebody over 60 that might be obese and have heart problems. And then suddenly, you know, children are getting it and everyone's getting it. So nobody knows what the real story is. So to answer your question, I think there is a fantastic cover-up of considerable mental health conditions. You only have to, and look, you don't have to be a therapist or a mental health professional to see it, because you can just talk to your friends, and your friends will, and if they're, you know, able and comfortable enough with you, they're going to say, look, you know, I'm not coping. People are seeing higher incidences of suicide. People are seeing that there are more people calling up Lifeline or other, you know, services that are necessary to help get some sort of supports. The government knows all of this. But this is the intent that I believe has been deliberately unleashed upon all of us to make us all feel like we are going in the quicksand. You know, your feet are sinking and you've got your arms up above you going, help, help. Because you literally don't know what's going to happen to you. And that's a pretty good metaphor for where we are all at present. As a society, we are all sinking into the quicksand with no idea about where this is going to take us. And if anyone thinks for a minute that people's mental health is going to be efficacious, then you need to get your head read, because people are really, really suffering. You know, and I would say through every single sector. So there cannot be any efficacy amongst people. And the ones that I think that are or seeming to cope are the ones that I believe that are in denial, refuse to see it, or simply can't see it.
And that's the scary part, isn't it, is the they can't see it. They don't know why they feel the way that they do. And so all you do is you go along to get along, and that's the reason why all of these crazy new ideas all seem to be coming out of the woodwork at exactly the same time. It seems almost impossible that when all this is said and done, whichever way it is said and done, that we cannot never return to life as we knew it pre-2020. It might as well be 1920 or 1820. So far, we've moved in the other direction. You look at energy in terms of climate change obsession now in the Australian government and around the world. You're looking at, obviously, the mental health aspect of it, the idea that we just get emails now from big corporations in Australia telling you to think about having a microchip under your skin. Where did that come from? We've got a never-ending battle with, 5,000, it seems, different viruses or diseases that are going to kill us at any one stage, and we need to be vaccinated against all of them, heaven forbid where it goes. I mean, it seems impossible, and so it's like we are being corralled into doing what we are told to do. But what I don't understand is, at what point does the human being say, you know what, I don't think I'm a human being anymore if I keep doing what they keep telling me to do? Is that the point, the line in the sand for people, when it just, everyone just stands up and says, no, we're not doing it anymore? Or is it a case of, no, we don't have that capacity as human beings anymore, given that we are constantly ruled over? At what point does the balance shift, or does it shift at all?
That's a really good question. And I think it's really important to state that this is where they are trying to go. They want us to get to a position by the confusion, by the sinking in the quicksand, not knowing what's going to happen, that people just become weakened by it and will eventually acquiesce and just go, you know what, I give up. I don't know. And this is what they want. They want to create the problem, create the divide, create the confusion, and then be the knight in shining armor on the white horse going, don't worry, we'll save you. So people go, oh my God, thank God, the government's here to rescue us because everything's going so bad. When really, they're the ones that are creating the problem. Look, all this business about climate change, they're going on and on and on and on and on, and all these global catastrophes and these catastrophes in Australia. Who do we think is actually creating the catastrophes? Is it global climate change? Is it suddenly that we've got all these bushfires in Sydney we had a couple of years ago, then suddenly we've got this torrential rain, and then you look at the news and this is the Bureau of Meteorology is saying, oh my God, unprecedented rain, there's going to be between 25 millimetres and 50 millimetres of rain, it's going to sweep the southern coast of New South Wales all the way up to Byron Bay, the north coast and Brisbane, it's going to be devastating floods. You know, the fact is, and if anyone is really awake, they will know about geoengineering, about cloud seeding, which is originally conceived to help stop the droughts for the farmers that would have, you know, droughts that went on for 4 or 5, 6 months where they're losing business. So it might have started out in a very benevolent way. You know, what can we do to help increase rainfall? And then somewhere along the way, or even if whether they've meant to or not, it's now become a very malevolent use of weaponry to destabilize people, to really create the problem, so we're all going to go, oh my God, it's climate change. Everything that has gone on about pollution has been designed by the government and large corporations. For example, we're the ones that pay what, 39 cents, 42 cents in the dollar or whatever it is, back to the tax. Then you hear about the large corporations that rake, you know, they make millions and billions of dollars in profits and they don't pay any tax. How come they don't pay tax, but we pay tax? How come we have to take our garbage out in different little boxes and talk about recycling and doing the right thing about, you know, the environment? And then we hear about all these huge corporations that are dumping, you know, thousands and thousands of tons of effluent and pollution into the environment, into the air. Oh, no, but it's our fault. The people have to suffer. We've got to go to sustainable living because we, as a collective, are ruining the planet, completely sidestepping the enormous corporations that are actually responsible for all of it. In fact, I became privy to a new website. It's the WBCSD.org, and it stands for the World Business Council for Sustainable Development. Get a load of their partners. This is Amazon, 3M, Shell, Toyota, Mitsubishi, Unilever, Microsoft, IKEA, Bloomberg, Chevron, United Nations, funny, they're in there. So they're all in there as these concerned companies and huge conglomerates ready to organize sustainable living so that us as people can live in these new environments where we're not going to be destroying the environment. Wait a minute, it wasn't us, man, it was you.
Yep.
So we're the ones being blamed. We're the ones that are being frightened. Well, supposedly the companies that have been creating all this pollution, all this effluent, all this drama, all this climate issue, and we're the ones that have to pay for it. Just like the government. They're creating it. We have to pay for it. The poor little insect on the street is responsible for all of this. I mean, I don't know how you could sleep at night, Jason. I can't. I've just the burden of it all is just overwhelming.
You make so many good points in there, which we're going to explore. We're going to pause for news headlines and be back straight after. You're on TNT Radio.
Matt Boyland here with a quick check of the day's headlines. It's been revealed that federal agents were reportedly looking for documents relating to nuclear weapons during Monday's unprecedented raid on Donald Trump. The computer repairman who blew the whistle on Hunter Biden's infamous laptop and handed it over to the FBI is now speaking out against the agency, accusing it of doubled standards. And as many as 30 people have been injured after two roller coasters collided at a theme park in Germany.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Welcome back to the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program. Malibu, when you look at the big picture, it's really easy to get flustered by it all because it just gets overwhelming. And so what I've tried to do and encourage others to do is to look forward to the little things in personal lives. Make sure that each day you do something for yourself that's for joy, and always want to find joy. And if you can't, then take the lesson in what it is. Another thing that I've observed now is that community spirit, certainly amongst people that would be listening to our radio station, is very, very different. There's a new attitude to becoming a whole lot more self-sufficient, right down to making direct efforts to put garden beds at home and grow things in the backyard. Another thing that I've noticed now is that more and more people, with the idea of the insects, are now looking at ways that they can secure their meat supply. But I'll tell you something that's just popped up that I've never seen before is an advertisement from a butcher in my local area on social media that is now selling entire lambs, cut up and showed you how he does it, at a set price. So people must be asking the question now and must be very concerned about what's going on and able to see around corners, to see into the future and realize that the threat of famine is genuine and is coming, and so that they want to secure their food supply and are now buying whole animals butchered for them. I think that's a huge leap forward in awareness. What are your thoughts?
Oh, I agree entirely. I think that's a wonderful idea. And I agree with you that it does seem like people are starting to wake up and they are concerned. There's no point buying, you know, half a dozen lamb chops. How long is that going to last?
That's
and
right.
A lot. I was just talking to somebody else who's also on this same page, and he was saying, well, what we really need to do, and this is great advice, is to take away from being the consumer, which is what we're used to, buying it elsewhere and living on it, but becoming our own producer. And one step forward to that is having your own lambs and sheep and whatever, and learning how to butcher them, and also learning how to store them. And that brings me to another point. If they cut off your electricity because you're a bad citizen, you haven't had your 75th booster, and you scored all these bad brownie points, and they cut off your supply, what do you do then? I mean, you could have a generator and that might help in the short term. But there's also, I think people should also learn about how they can salt their products so that it's going to last a lot longer and be able to resist contamination or, you know, be downgraded or whatever in the storage process. So learning about storage, I think, is going to be really important. But that's fantastic that people are starting to think about it. And I just wanted to add the scary article about foot and mouth disease coming to Australia and, you know, how terrible it is. There was a little insert inside that article that said foot and mouth disease so far has not been detected in Australia. But nobody's going to read that bottom part.
No,
they're going
of course
to read
not.
All the other stuff. This is, oh my God, foot and mouth disease. Oh my God, we're going to destroy all the animals. So the fact that there's so many lies, certainly being self-sufficient is going to be the way in the future for those that are awake to take care of their own business and go from a consumer to a self-producing person or community.
It seems that
in fact, I don't think I've ever admired the Amish as much as I do today.
They seem to have got it all right, haven't they?
The movie, there was a movie called Witness back in the late 80s or something with Harrison Ford and Kelly McGillis.
That's right.
And they were at this Amish community. I remember thinking, oh, how awful. Oh, my God, that's dreadful. Oh, I couldn't live with that. Now I'm thinking, they can do it, so can I.
And the funny thing, of course, is that the Amish didn't go down the vaccine path and have virtually non-existent cancer rates. Obviously, no one's dying there from, well, they did report a few COVID deaths in the early days, but of course, that's all gone away. And it is, of course, a great control group, isn't it, when you're looking for a scientific explanation.
Yeah.
And what it's telling people is that those of us that want to be self-sufficient, there is more than enough resources out there allowing us to learn and develop. But it seems that the system is obsessed with making you so busy with nonsense. I love quoting from movies. Life is Beautiful is another one of my all-time favorites, the Italian film about the father played by Roberto Benigni, who hides the Holocaust from his son and turns it into a game. It's almost a Chaplin film. It was absolutely remarkable. Wow. But in the beginning of the film, he goes to meet his uncle and he's talking really flustered Italian, and you're reading the subtitles and he's telling him about this, that, and the other. And there was a line that says, "There is nothing more necessary than the unnecessary." And it seems that that is the world that we live in today, that we are so consumed with nonsense and irrelevancy and trivia that we don't have time for the important things. It's like why I brought up the idea of participation in my opening today. I thought it would be a nice topic there. When someone takes on a job, a career, and you take it on, you're a teenager and you select a career perhaps as a trade, and then you realize that at retirement, 65 years of age, 70 years of age, that that's all you've done for your entire life. So you've only worked with a small group of people. You may have mixed with the general public on a job site, but you've only ever had such a closeted lifetime and lifestyle. You don't really meet anyone. You don't really know how other people think, how they live. You don't see anything. And so your whole awareness is so restricted. I having been someone who's worked, you know, in many industries and careers and paths and studied this and studied that and given up on that and picked up something else, it feels like to me it is the discovery that is the life. And it's not the process, that the process work is not where it's part of. So perhaps we're a little bit biased compared to society as a whole, that we have these career paths, the courage to move interstate, to start a new job, like you've moved and started somewhere else. And so are we just different people, and therefore are we representative of a split in the species, which is something that I feel is deep in my gut, that that's what's actually happened here?
That's a really good point. And look, that's a whole new debate. I think, I grew up in a little suburb called Brighton in Melbourne, and I know people there. I mean, I left at the age of 22. I mean, grew up there, went to school there, blah, blah, blah. I left at 22 and I went on this huge journey. I lived in lots of different places, lots of different jobs, as you're saying. And I know plenty of people that stayed there, said the same job or very similar jobs, and never left the postcode, and they're perfectly happy. And I look out from my outside looking and I think, oh, how could you? How boring! You know, I think that's, you know, you've got like blinkers on. You don't get this rich tapestry of life. But other people are perfectly happy with that. I kind of, from my therapist lens, I view that as a bit of a safety thing and a cultural thing. This is what my parents did. This is what I do. You know, it's really hard to sort of pinpoint or even predict a personality or a subtype that's going to choose something alternative to their parents' lifestyle or to the norms. I mean, I never wanted to have children. There's nothing wrong with having children. I just chose from an early age that wasn't for me. And people think there's something wrong with that. No, there isn't. Not everybody is the, for me, a mother means all about looking after two or three people for 20, 25 years and beyond. And if you're not prepared to do that, then it would be wrong for me to follow that path. And I think it's very, very important for people as a whole to feel like they belong and feel accepted. And some people just don't give a rat's about that and go, you know what, I don't care about what you think. I'm happy to go on my own path, and so be it, whatever you think. Call me what you will, it will make no difference to me. I think that takes a very particular type of inner strength. From where it comes, we don't really know, or I don't really know. I'd love to find out. But I don't think it's an inherent trait in all of us, because we do ultimately choose our own pathway, either consciously or unconsciously.
And that's the thing, isn't it? Because life can take all sorts of twists and turns. To quote John Lennon, life is what happens when you're busy making other plans. And so there has to be an element of surprise in all of it to work out where you're going in life. But you go back to that person who has lived the same job in the same postcode and done that, and yet I wonder if the system provides them that security that they will go along to get along, take the vaccine, take the microchip, go down that 100%. Particular pathway. And so,
absolutely. People, I think I've mentioned this before, people do not want, no one, and the government and psychologists know all about this. They've been studying behaviours and responses for decades. They know that nobody wants to be that one person that stands out on a limb and says, just a minute, I don't want to follow all the other lemmings into the Red Sea. I want to go the other direction. Those lemmings, I don't see what's happened to those lemmings. I'm not going that way. Whereas all the other lemmings will go, oh, let's all go over there. He's going, so it must be all right. They're going, so it must be all right. That's why they use a lot of celebrity endorsements. Oh, well, the Britney Spears says it's all right, or the Kardashians say it's all right. Well, they wouldn't lie, would they? I mean, it's just diabolical. But they don't realise that people paid, you know, a fortune to coerce.
That's,
you know? And the other thing I wanted to bring up, your guest that you had on before me had a book called Dan Andrews Unmasked. And yes. I just want to allude to the fact we were talking about, you know, having your own produce in your own garden and you know, talking about being self-sufficient and so forth. But hasn't Dan Andrews passed a law that says in Victoria they can't grow their own vegetables and they're going to, and if they choose to go out into the rural areas, the government, I mean, or their agents or officers, authorised officers, I think they're called, they can go in there and destroy their animals. Did your guest allude to any of that?
No, we didn't. We didn't talk about that specifically. I realised that was an interesting and highly controversial law there. And when they get into it, when you share that stuff on social media, they go, "Well, that's not exactly what it said," and it gives you the scope to do it. Rah rah rah. And that is an interesting point. And what's worse, of course, is that Andrews is a hot favourite to win again. And be re-elected. And even when you look on the betting agencies, he's like half the price of the Liberal. And that was part of the reason to get Jeff Shaw on the show today, was to try and work out why it is that the opposition is so ineffective over there or down there in Victoria, and what it is that they seem to be missing out on. I can't understand in all of this, Malibu, is how the opposition parties are so the same as the government they're trying to overthrow. It beggars belief that they can't come up with anything original, particularly in Victoria where it was so glaringly obvious. You had businesses closed down. Jeff was saying that there are, you know, many, many shops and businesses that are just shut up, boarded. They've never come back. In Melbourne, of all places, the thriving, bustling, beautiful city that it once was, that when you went to Melbourne, you spent all your time out on the streets just participating, and yet that's the one thing that's gone now. How could Melbourne even be close to being the same thing? It's just shocking. Look, we're going to take one more break, and when we come back, a whole lot more here on Jason Q Citizen and Friends. You're listening to TNT Radio.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
We've made a very serious discovery. If you look at CFACT, I published an article on correlation there. I guess it's a blog nowadays. But the serious discovery is there is a direct correlation between the increase in the price of postage stamps and CO2. Obviously, the increase in postage stamps is causing increasing temperatures and increasing CO2. So the solution is get the price of postal stamps down. Here's another ditty. More people get sunburned and melanoma in the summer. More people also eat ice cream cones during the summer. What does this tell you? We've got to get rid of ice cream. This is WeatherBell.com meteorologist and ice cream lover Joe Bastardi for TNT Radio, reminding you to enjoy your ice cream cone and the weather before someone takes both of them away from you.
You have the right to know. The right to know about culture. The right to know about the economy. The right to know about technology and to know about sports. You have the right to know about education and politics and the weather. You have the right to know what's happening abroad and in your backyard. But above all else, you have the right to know that this right is under attack, and we must work to protect it. Because in order to be free, we must be informed. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
Get breaking news on your phone when it happens. Download our app from the Google Play and App Store now.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program. Malibu, it has been that cold this winter. When I get into bed, it's like getting into the swimming pool. How are you finding it down there in Tassie?
Oh, freezing. The only thing that's... Look, I often think about this when people say from Sydney, you know, how bad is it down there? And I say, well, look, this is what it's like. If you like going skiing and you're used to the freezing cold and it's drizzly and, you know, you get a bit of a runny nose and all that jazz and you go inside and you get all cozy, that's exactly what it's like, but without the snow. So when you wake up in the morning, there'll be a white carpet of frost and ice, but no actual snow. So it is. It's damn cold. And I admit I've got my electric blanket on 3, which is the highest setting. Mm. And I have that on for most of the night till about 4 a.m. Then I go, oh, I think I'm cooking in here, and I turn it down to 2. But, yeah, it's pretty cold. And sometimes I don't even want to have a shower because it's too cold to get naked, if you pardon my expression. Mm. I don't want to go in because it's too cold. But, I think it's pretty damn chilly. And when they talk about climate change and everything warming up, then I think, well, you know, climate has been changing for billions of years. We did already have an ice age, and that had nothing to do with human intervention.
Yes. It's an interesting point again, that one. There was a great video I saw the other day that was trying to explore the possibility of comparing human existence over Earth's history, saying that Earth is 4.5 billion years old, humans have only been around 100,000 years, and exploring the archaeological record of humans and before to determine what happened in the past. And there's only a certain amount before you can't find anything going back. So they had to explore weather records, and the weather records showed a similar period to where the Earth heated up, and they tracked it to 56 million years ago. And they were trying to determine whether or not there could have been another advanced civilization that perhaps caused its own form of climate change some 56 million years ago. Unable to conclude either way, but a really interesting process there of how science is meant to go back and how it's completely limited and is unable to find out. Because if reality or the existence of the universe is considered to be 11 billion years old and we've only been around 100,000 years, there has to have been something else surely in that period of time, or not, but it certainly allows the human being to be able to explore and to think about the possibility of what's going on as we explore more evidence in what it is. And we obviously want to know what's going on as we can plan for our futures. But if it's all about just following this pathway of becoming microchipped, as Suncorp is now telling us to expect that's what we need to think about, and happy clap on the insurance and bank that tells us that this is what we need to do, heaven forbid, then we have to go down the AI pathway. Thank you, Elon Musk, even though he's the one that's showing the most resistance in that department. But the idea of being microchipped and AI'd into oblivion means that we're going to turn ourselves into robots anyway. So where does the human being go from this point? And of course, you've got the smart city process, which is technically doing the same thing at the same time. Where do we go from here?
Well, I think it's an interesting point. I mean, they've been preparing us for this entire transhumanism, as you said earlier in the program, preparing us for transhumanism, you know, and accepting the integration of technology. I mean, if you think about Pfizer is owned by, or the COVID injection is BioNTech, biology and technology. It's the convergence of both of those into one. And I think when we talk about microchipping, I think that's a very antiquated way of looking at it. I think artificial intelligence, you know, is nanotechnology that can respond. Like I don't know if you know about the neurons in the brain, they're fired by synapses. So whenever you have a thought, you're having a synapse, and it trajects these neurological pathways to have a thought. So through artificial intelligence, whenever you have a synaptic incident or you're having a thought, then that's going to integrate the technology that might respond in a way either nefariously against you or towards you. We don't know, because we don't really know what their technology is capable of. But we do know that DARPA within the Defense Department in Washington, inside the Pentagon, has been working for decades to integrate humans with this biotechnology. And I think when you talk about being human, as in God's creation, well, how can we be? if your DNA that is you in your very essence, at your very nucleus, is being interfered with and ultimately changed synthetically, then and owned by a patent that has been recorded already in the patents back in 2011, how can you call yourself a human when you're not even having the human experience because you are changed? And if you listen to someone like Klaus Schwab, head of the World Economic Forum, he actually talks about the fourth industrial revolution, and he doesn't talk about it as an external thing. He says, it is not the revolution that will change you. It is you who is changed, quote unquote.
Isn't that the most frightening statement you could ever hear? And it's just sort of just given...
Oh, absolutely horrible. I do not want to be changed. Leave me alone. So you can hear by my voice that I'm reacting, you know, emotionally to that, because that's extraordinary psychopathic of anyone to say that you will be changed. You keep the, you know, keep the F away from me. How dare you? Who do you think you are? And like these big corporations, who do you think you are? You're the ones who've been polluting the planet, and you're only going to make us pay for it. And talking about, you know, population reduction, like we're just, you know, useless eaters. Why are you any more important than I am?
Yeah, exactly right. And this is the big thing, isn't it? Because we're told that it's all about equality, it's all about inclusiveness, but only on our terms, and that's
our
the hard
terms.
Part.
So how is that? That's not inclusive at all, you know. And that's why if anyone keeps going on to you that this is for your own good, it's for your own good, it's for your own good, it's for your own good, you know damn well it's not for your own good.
Yeah.
Because if it was, you wouldn't have to keep telling me. I would be able to see the benefits. But because we won't be able to see the benefits, they've got to create the indoctrinate us now with how amazing it's going to be for all of us. There will be no poor, Jason. How can that be? No poor. Because we'll all be squashed down as the, you know, the useless eaters that, you know, can eat bugs and live in these pods and you know, be microchipped or, you know, artificial intelligence all over the place telling us what to do. While the and I'm not going to call them elites because they're not, because they're scum. While the people at the top are pulling the strings like they're the puppeteers. How dare you?
Yes. Now, does the average human being today have the capacity to survive what's been thrown at them right now, or are they just going to go along to get along, or worse, just perish in the great rush that's coming?
What do you mean by the great rush?
Well, in the change in the technology, the AI, the
I see.
The compliance, the vaccine.
Look, I'm afraid because people say, oh, when push comes to shove, people will stand up. Now, I've maintained this for a while. How can we say that? Because we don't know. I mean, as Klaus Schwab says, people are changed. But how do we know they're going to, how do we know in what way they're going to be changed? Are they changed already? Are you changed? Is your resistance changed from the very first, you know, vaccination to the second, to the third? Does each one weaken you, each, you know, your resistance? Or, you know, using electronic magnetic frequencies, if you've even had one shot and said, no more, I've woken up to it, I know what's happened, will you be affected by different frequencies that only you can hear, that they've collected from your DNA, that they've taken from this faulty PCR test or this ridiculous rat test that we know that are nonsense and don't do anything? We don't know what the resistance will hold. Is it too late? I don't know. Will the only ones survive that haven't had any vaccination? I don't know. We don't even know about the shedding and how bad that can be. Or how that could affect
you. Yeah, it's an interesting point.
Or if you're not vaccinated and you're having intercourse with someone who is, what might that mean? Or you have a blood transfusion from someone who is.
And these are all the great big unknowns. I tell you what, Senator Gerard Rennick's doing some amazing research. Every day he puts something brilliant out, but he's starting to finally piece together the various data that he's been able to collect that's exposing exactly what you're saying along the way in real time with real evidence. And, of course, it's being met by complete ignoring by the rest of the parliament, but it's out there for the people to... what they do and share that information. And so these are impressive questions that need to be asked. They are beyond the scope of most people, unfortunately, but not everyone. And here's the point of all of us in this community. We have to lead by example and lead with new information. And of course, we get some of these things wrong, but I tell you what, overall, we're getting the vast majority of it right, and we're able to call it well in advance. It certainly is a very, very trying time for all of us. But what's interesting, Malibu, is that we don't seem to be giving up. We seem to be building resilience. We seem to be building great networks and friendships. And we are living our best life amongst the circumstances. So all of these are terrific signs that there is a resistance in the human species, those that wish to remain humans. And that's a really, really important point. Unfortunately, we have run out of time. So I'm going to wish you a farewell until the next time we get to speak, and certainly to chase up more about those smart cities, Malibu. Thank you very much. I hope you have a wonderful weekend out there, and it warms up pretty soon because we're approaching spring. We need to see some sunlight.
We do. Thanks for having me, Jason. Always a pleasure.
Good on you, Malibu. Coming up next, we've got the news and then a whole lot more. Rick Munn, Locked and Loaded. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to TNT Radio.